I explained in the past that the root and underlying foundation of the sin of Nadav and Avihu. Nadav and Avihu, on the day that the Mishkan was dedicated and God's presence devolved into the Mishkan, symbolized by the fire that came from the heavens and burnt up the sacrifices on the altar, they brought a strange fire which they weren't commanded to bring, and because of that they died. And I've explained in the past that the basic idea is that they were so excited emotionally and wanted to get close to God that they didn't bother to think how properly it should be done and let God create the framework within which you can get close to Him, and they just got carried away with their emotion and their ecstasy and were more concerned with the substance than the form. And that really was the foundation of the sin of the golden calf. Sin of the golden calf was not that they believed that this golden calf was God. They weren't infantile people. And when they came and asked for the golden calf, they didn't ask for a substitute for God. They asked for a substitute for Moshe. They felt that they needed some intermediary, something that would channel God's power and influence through that channel would come to them. Just like Moshe Rabbeinu, that's what they felt. Moshe Rabbeinu was the channel, the intermediary of channeling God's influence and power to them in the desert. And they chose a spiritual power that was part of God's throne, which is represented by the ox. The ox is the power of Parnassa, of plowing and planting and whatever. That's what's represented by the ox. And it also is the symbol of strength. And that's what they needed. They needed God's strength and His ability to provide for them in the desert food. And therefore they took this ox, and they wanted to manipulate this spiritual power that was represented and manifested in this golden calf to be their intermediary between them and God and to connect them into God. And that's no different than the Mishkan. The Mishkan is also gold boxes and gold, candelabras and altars that connect us to God. So what's the difference between connecting yourself to God through a golden calf or a golden box? Says the Khuzri, is only one difference. Whether God was the one who designed that or we designed it on our own. You have to connect yourself to God the way God wants you to connect Him, not the way you want. It can't just be done on emotion. It has to be done on dikduk, on being meticulous to the setup that God sets up. The example I love to give is, you open up your fuse box, major fuse box in the house, and you want to, electricity is a tremendously potent power, and you want to connect in to that power of electricity, and use it for your house. So you look at it and you say, aesthetically, I don't like the yellow wires connected to the green wires and the red. It would look much more aesthetic, right? And really, I think I would be much more imbued with, emotion if the red ones were connected to the black ones and the green ones were connected to the yellow ones, right? And you therefore rewire your whole house aesthetically, color code, okay? And then you say, I really think that I really want to get close to this electric source, and I want to, plug in directly my 110 appliance into my 220 outlet, right? You know what happens? It gets burnt out. Yeah, it happens often. At best, the thing burns out. It could cause a short circuit. It could cause the whole house to burn down. That's what happened to Nadav and Avihu, and that's happened by the sin of the golden calf. They wanted to connect in to this power source card called God. You need the electrician to tell you how to do it. God's the electrician. You can't create the connections based on your emotions, on your aesthetics, right? How you would think that the connection should be made. Because if you do, you're going to be causing a lot of short circuits, and you may be plugging yourself into something where you need a transformer, and if you don't have the transformer, you're going to burn your neshama out. And that's what happens in Nadav and Avihu. They connected in to that power of the Ribbono Shel Olam in a way that was not mandated, in a way that was not God-oriented, and they burned their neshamas out. They were 110, and they plugged into 220. It wasn't necessarily a punishment that they were punished. That's what happened. That's what happens when you, it says, Zeh HaDover by the Mishkan. Zeh HaDover, the Mitziv says something similar to this. Zeh HaDover HaShetziva, this is what God commanded, and his presence will devolve in the Mishkan. And the Medrash says, get rid of that Yetzer Hara that you have. The Yetzer Hara to connect to God based on your emotion, on your idea, what you think is proper. First, accept God's framework. Within that framework, fill up all the emotion, all the aesthetics that you can have. But don't let the emotion and the aesthetics create the framework. Let the emotions and the aesthetics fill the framework that God creates. That is the basic idea. And that's why they died on the day that the avoda, the service to God, was dedicated. They really should have died earlier, the Medrash says. They had the same sin in the earlier time. It says that they had a tremendous prophetic vision of God, and they dealt with it in a very flippant way, like they were eating and drinking. They didn't deal with it with the right reverence, because they felt that just getting close to God is the main thing. The substance is the main thing. The framework, right, the form is not all that important. And therefore, how we deal with it is not important. The main thing is we got close to God. We got lost in their ecstasy. But they didn't realize that there's a proper way, and there's decorum, and there's reverence, and there's respect, and you have to stay within the framework. So really, that sin, that Yetzer Hara already manifests itself the day the Torah was given. But God didn't want to mar the happiness, the joy of the giving of the Torah. So he didn't kill them that day. He waited till they repeated that sin now again, when they brought this Eish Zorah, this strange fire. Strange insofar that the form of how it was brought was not proper. Even though the idea, the emotion was fine. We want to get close to God. But do it the way God wants, not the way you want. And that's why they were killed on that day. But that day also was a tremendous day of joy. The day that the Mishkan was dedicated. Why did God kill them then? Just wait till the next Thursday and kill them then. Why now? If he didn't want to mar the simcha of the giving of the Torah, why mar this simcha? But that's the idea. Since they were dedicating service to God, this would teach a lesson to all future generations. This is not the way to serve God. Serving God is within the framework that he creates. He's the electrician. He'll wire your house. Then you plug in your things into his framework, and you'll get tremendous electricity. But if you think that you're going to wire the house on your own and you have no idea what you're doing, then you may end up burning out your motor and burning down your house. So dafket was done then. And that's why after the parsha of the death of Nadav and Avihu come the following parshios. First, the parsha of Shtuya Yayin. Don't go in to serve God drunk. It's exactly the idea. Don't get drunk emotionally with your passion to get close to God and throw to abandon the form of how it's done. Let God give you the framework, fill it with passion. Don't let your passion decide how you're going to connect yourself to God. I'll give you two examples of how people, make up their own connections to God, and who knows what kind of short purchase they'd be making. You know, there are people who claim to be religious. I'm not talking about people who are not religious, who make up their own religions, you know. Some people who want to keep mitzvahs, who supposedly are Shomrei Torah mitzvahs, but they're very innovative. For instance, you know, a boy is born, so the Torah said the eighth day you have to have a bris. So there's a bris for a boy, and there's a simcha, whatever. A girl is born, Torah didn't give any specific mitzvah to do at that point. Believe me, they make it up at a wedding. But in any case, the and it takes all those years to prepare for it. But in any case, okay. So there are people who say that, you know, God short-changed women. You know, a girl is born and there's no ceremony, and you know, God doesn't like women anyway. Haraya, he made Pesach, so what's it called? So we want to get closer to God. Right? Just like a boy, there's a bris, a covenant, something that bonds you and closes you. We want to get closer to God through a girl, too. So they decided that they're going to make a ceremony called a brita. Okay? And it's not the, they don't dedicate one of these water filters. That's not what a brita is. It is a, but it's similar to that. Because, yeah, very similar, because what did they do? They said, well, what mitzvah does a woman have, right? I mean, she has challah, but you're not going to let a little eight-day infant, you know, stuff dough down her mouth or something or whatever, or encase her in dough, so that doesn't help. And she has, you know, candle lighting, but what can a little infant do with candles? So she has the mitzvah of taras ha-mishpacha, mikvah. So they have a whole ceremony about the purity of water or whatever. It's very, very similar to something else called baptism.
Right.
They don't dip the girl in a mikveh, okay, she's 8 days old, but they have the water ceremony or whatever. I don't know exactly what it is, with a lot of psukim or whatever. And again, you may be, you know, causing short circuits. You want to get close to God, but why don't you let God tell you how to do it instead of making up your own things? Okay, or another possibility, right? And there's a very big difference between enhancing things and creating new things. Okay, for instance, Kabbalah Shabbos. Okay, is Kabbalah Shabbos, and you say certain Mizmorei Tehillim and Lechadodi. Now you may want to jazz that up and make it more spiritual, and you might want to have, you know, a Kalbach Kabbalah Shabbos. Okay, where everything is sung and people dance. Fine, it's not my cup of tea necessarily, right? But, okay, you're basically filling the framework that exists with a lot of emotion and whatever. That's not bad. But somebody says, you know, this whole thing of Kabbalah Shabbos, that doesn't really speak to me. I think we should sit on the floor and light candles, right, and have a guitar. And maybe, what's it called, you know, light some incense or some other things that will really make us spiritual, right, and really connecting to God for Shabbos, okay? That is not filling the framework with emotion. That's creating a new framework. And then you have the danger that you're causing short circuits and plugging yourself into something in a way that burns out your neshama. So that was the sin, and therefore, after the sin of Nadav and Avihu, the Torah gives the parasha that you can't serve God, nor can you make decisions halachically when you're drunk. And drunk doesn't mean drunk like on Purim. Drunk means you drank one cup of wine, and your mind is, your sensitivity and your emotions are stronger than your intellect. You have to start with the intellect and fill it with emotion. You can't let the emotion run your intellect. You can't be drunk with emotion, even a little bit, to serve God. Second thing, after that is, you can't serve God without the proper haircut. A Kohen can't let his hair grow more than 30 days.
Oh, this is in
Shemini. This is Shemini. All is in Shemini. He has to... The framework, the form is important. There has to be a certain respect. There has to be a certain reverence. You can't just, you know, let your hair grow and let your hair down and, you know, just do whatever you want. There is a proper way between emotion and intellect, and there's a proper way of reverence of how you have to look and how you have to behave, right, in order to serve God. There is definite guidelines and framework that you have to fit into, and you have to be meticulous about it. The details are important. That's the second parasha. And then comes the parasha after that, the parasha of kashrus, of what you eat, and how meticulous you have to be in discerning what's proper and what's not proper. Now, eating is that which basically makes more of me, right? Makes my existence exist, and therefore I enjoy eating because I enjoy existing, right? And by existing and using the world, certainly the animal kingdom, eating animals and using them, what's it called, to promote my existence is also my way of connecting the world and myself to God. Because that's all that we do when we do mitzvahs. We eat, and especially meat, to celebrate the mitzvah, and to meat gives a person simcha. It sensitizes his emotions, eating meat. And ein simcha el b'basar v'yayin, meat and wine bring a person to simcha. And yom tov, we eat a meat meal and wine, it's a way of connecting into God. But in order to eat meat, you have to be very discerning. You can't just eat whatever you want. There's tremendous, which we'll discuss in a few seconds, but this is the idea, and it says, if there's no das, then there can't be havdalah. Right? That's why the bracha of atachon antanu, havdalah, is in the bracha of atachonin ladam das. If you don't have understanding, you can't make distinctions. You can't be discerning. The opposite is also true. If you're not discerning, then you can't have das. You don't have any understanding. Understanding and being able to make distinctions and the distinctions go together. And understanding, das, is what connects you to God. Bechol drachecha do'eu, in all your ways, know Him. Knowing God means having a connection to Him, bonding to Him. That's what knowledge is. And knowledge is that close connection, cleaving to God, is knowledge of God. The chol drachecha deo means kol ma'asecha ilushin. Everything you do should be for the sake of heaven. You're bonding and connecting into God with your das. But in order to do that, you have to be very discerning. You have to know how to do it properly. It's not just the substance of wanting to get close to God that's enough. It's the form of how to do it, which is also important. And we'll see in 1 second how kashrus represents that in a section. However, the the Sfarno points out that before the sin of the golden calf, this framework was much more flexible. Anywhere you wanted to, you could connect into God. You didn't need to come to the Beis HaMikdash. But once they sinned with the golden calf, it became necessary to have a very rigid framework. You had to come to a certain place to do that. Use certain things to be able to get close to God. That was the Mishkan. And, therefore, you had to also be very discerning in not doing things that would make you tummy. You had to remain tar. You had to eat the right things. And you had to come in contact with the right things. All to create the right framework. And that is what's it called... That made the Mishkan operative. Because if you were Tameh, you couldn't go into the Mishkan, and you couldn't make sacrifices, and you couldn't eat the sacrifice if you were spiritually defiled. And what spiritually defiled you was eating the wrong things, coming in contact with the wrong things, or whatever. All of that was necessary after the sin of the golden calf. Okay. Now, this idea that God creates the framework within which we function is not just in spiritual things, but it's as much in spiritual as in the physical world. We see in the physical world that God creates the framework, You can't make your own framework like we gave the example with electricity. There are rules of nature, and those rules of nature are very rigid. And if you go out of those rules, you are playing with fire. You're very dangerous. You see what happens when the laws of nature are abrogated, right? What kind of destruction comes? Look at Japan, right? When the earth moves a little bit out of its normal, the way nature's supposed to be, look what happens for an earthquake. When the waters of the sea move a little bit out of their framework, there's a tsunami, right? When people get carried away with emotion and don't use their intellect, they let their emotion guide them, that's Islam. Total distorted emotion, right? For the sake of who knows what they think they're doing, right? Spirituality, but they're animals. Mamish animal, worse than animals. Animals don't kill little children for no purpose. They only kill them if they need it, if they're hungry and they eat. They don't kill them and leave their bodies just like this. That's worse than animals. But what people carried away with emotion, distorted emotion, and the most of them, you know, think that they are getting closer to God with this. They're becoming martyrs. They're shahidim. People blow themselves up. It's all emotion with no intellect, with no framework. It's total abandon, hefkeiros, and that's what happens. So when nature goes out of its boundaries, you see what happens in Japan. And when people go out of their boundaries, you see what happens with disgusting terrorists. So it's enough to give us an understanding that if we want to really connect ourselves to God, then we have to learn and understand His framework and function within it with all the emotion we can have, but fill the framework with emotion, not create the framework from the emotion. So in any case, and that's why the one of the kaparos, the atonements for the sin of the golden calf, was the Parah Aduma. The Parah Aduma is the archetype, is the symbol par excellence of something beyond our intellect, where we have to stay within God's framework whether we understand it or not. And that is what the atonement for the sin of the golden calf. You think you can create the framework how to connect to God by making a golden calf? The atonement is to take a Parah Aduma, which you don't understand, is beyond your intellect, beyond your comprehension, and if you become tameh and separated from God, and you want to then become tahar and pure and connect yourself into God, you're going to have to do it His way, even though it's beyond your intellect, beyond your understanding. That's a chok. Chok means a law of nature. It's part of the laws of nature, just like there's physical laws of nature, there's spiritual laws of nature also. And that's why, okay. So that is the parshios, and that's why this week is also Parshas Parah, which is the atonement for the sin of the gold calf, and another Navio died because they repeated the sin of the gold. All of this is the same thing. Don't get carried away with your understanding and your emotion and think you can create the framework. It doesn't work like that. And that's why we read the Parsha of Parah before Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Next week is Parshas HaChodesh, or the week after that is Parshas HaChodesh, and this week is Parah. Even though in the sequence of events, they didn't make the Parah Aduma till after Rosh Chodesh Nisan of the second year. Right? So really, Parshas HaChodesh should come before Parshas Parah. But the Yerushalmi says the reason that Parshas Parah comes first is Zeu Tarosin Shal Yisrael. The idea being, the whole purpose that God took us out of Egypt was that we can be discerning, fit His framework, and get closer to Him. And in order to do that, you have to be able to get closer in the way that He wants, even if you don't understand it. That's Parshas Parah. That's the goal. In the sequence, sometimes Sof Ma'aseh B'Machshav Atchila, even though this is the original thought and goal, but the sequence is different. To get there, you have to start with something else. So the Torah, a lot of times, speaks first about the goal and then the means of how to get to that goal. So the goal is Parah Aduma, Tahara. that you should be able to be pure, have that connection to God in a way that is beyond your rationale. But the means of doing that was being taken out of Egypt or whatever, that's Parshas HaChodesh. But the whole purpose of being taken out of Egypt is that we should be able to elevate ourselves and connect ourselves into God by fitting His framework and making the distinctions to fit into that framework. And that is the idea of kashrus. Kashrus also is something beyond rationale. There are ideas behind kashrus, but ultimately it's a chok. It's something beyond our rationale. And it teaches us how much you have to be discerning to be able to add to your own being that then you can connect into God. Just that the foundation of having more of you so there's what to connect into God needs a tremendous amount of discerning. First of all, you have to discern between different things in this world. Some things are proper to use as connections to God, some things not. There are animals that you can eat and animals you can't eat. Not only that, it's not just so simple that there's animals you can't eat. Even for the animals you can't eat, some of them look like animals that you could eat. They have one of the kashrus things. A pig, right, has cloven feet, doesn't chew its cud. A camel chews its cud, but doesn't have cloven feet. So you have to be so discerning. It's not just very simple, though, these things for sure are not kosher, these things are. The things that look kosher, that you have to be even more discerning and see that maybe it, in one way it looks like it's kosher, but it really is not kosher. And once you get past the min, the type of animal, now you have a kosher animal, but you can't just kill it anyway. You have to kill it by slaughtering it. And slaughtering means that you slaughter more than half of the trachea and esophagus. But if you do exactly half, it's not kosher. So the difference in discerning whether something is kosher or not, how you now prepare that thing. There are things in this world that are not you can't use to get closer to God. There are things you can. Even those things you can have to be prepared properly. And the preparation is in an infinitesimal little bit that makes a difference between where it's proper and improper. More than half? Half. How much is the difference? A small infinitesimal amount. So that's the next thing. Then once you slaughter it properly and you take the things that are possible to use to get closer to God, you prepare them properly. There are parts of them that can't be used. The fats, certain kinds of fats are forbidden. So from a kosher animal that was shechted properly, you have to take off those fats. And then even from the part that you can eat, you have to take out the blood. So you have to further be discerning and separating and meticulous. And then once you take out the blood and you have good meat, there's a proper way to prepare it. You can cook it in water, not in milk. And then once you have the product, there's a proper time to eat it and a way to eat it and a bracha to make. Right, and when not to eat, and when you're allowed to eat, Yom Kippur you can't eat, and another day you could eat, right? And there's a proper way to eat it, and where to eat it. All these things are also, right? Places you're not allowed to eat. So there's so many chances to fit the framework and to discover the framework that kashrus teaches you, and that is part of the opposite of the sin of not about you. You just can't do it because you feel this is the way it has to be done. Because this is the way I feel I'm going to connect myself to God. You can't even create the wherewithal to have something to create to connect to God without going through a million different discernments havdolos to make divisions and choices of what's right and what's wrong and what's proper and what's improper, whatever. All of that is what kashrus represents. And after you have that, now you can sit down and eat a meal and inject all of the emotion and happiness and feelings of spirituality. That's a Suda's mitzvah. That's sitting down and eating a Suda. Right, and thanking God for for providing your parnasa and using that as a means to get closer to God. But first you have the right framework. And in order to have the right framework, you'd have to go through a lot of metamorphosis to fit the right type, and in that right type, to prepare it the proper way, to get rid of the parts of that type that are not acceptable, to then extract the negative things from the positive itself, and then to what's it called, prepare it properly and use it properly. All of that, one stage after another, all of that what Kashrus teaches me, how to be discerning, how to be meticulous in creating the framework that God said, within this framework, you can connect yourself to me. This is how you add to yourself to have what to connect to me. So surely the various frameworks of the connections to God have to be God-oriented and not man-oriented. So that's the lesson that we're supposed to learn from Parsha Shmini, which is the dedication of the Mishkan, the dedication of service to God, right? Had to be done in a way that you understood that it can't be done with emotion overruling your intellect, but the intellect which is subservient to God, who creates the framework, is filled with emotion, but only after you have the proper framework, after you accept the fact that God is the one who gives you the framework within which to function. You don't create it by your own desires, your own ideas, or your own emotions. That's what Torah is all about, and that's Parsha Shmini. The sin of Nodav and Avihu, you see that if you try to make your own wiring, you may burn out your neshama, and therefore, don't drink wine, don't have the right haircut, and the laws of kashrus pretty much give us a good example of what creating the right framework means in connecting into God. Any questions? Yeah.
Within the framework, let's say, could you spend a little more time doing the stuff that you feel more emotional connection to? Let's say somebody might spend more time downing, others might spend more time.
The Rambam says that the reason God gave us so many mitzvahs is that everybody could find a mitzvah that has a connection to their neshama and do it perfectly. And that's how they get their olam haba. Okay, so yes, there is an idea of people having mitzvahs that they have more of a connection to, whatever. But here also there's a framework of which mitzvah to do when, which takes precedence, when you can give up a mitzvah to do a different mitzvah, when you're not allowed to do that. So that's also part of the framework. So if you function within that framework of knowing the Torah gives you priorities for mitzvahs, and sometimes what's taken into consideration is what's close to your neshama. But it's because God said, that's what, for instance, learning Torah takes precedence over all other mitzvahs, because it's a greater mitzvah, except if it's a mitzvah that you must do, nobody else can do it, and it must be done now, then you stop learning Torah. If it's a mitzvah somebody else can do, then you don't stop learning Torah. If it's a mitzvah that, doesn't have to be done now, then continue learning Torah, do the mitzvah some other time. So there are guidelines of what the priorities of mitzvahs are also, what the hierarchy of mitzvahs are. That's also part of the framework. So if you're functioning within the framework, right, then there's place for individuality, there's place for aesthetic enhancement of mitzvahs, there's things that I can feel more emotionally attached to, but that's also part of the framework. It's never just how I feel about it, what my feelings are.
And all this is really because of our limited intellect and
right.
Let's say
right.
The Ava.
Because we live, right, and even before the sin of the golden calf, it could be that it was less rigid. But a lot of this is because we showed that if we're not given a rigid framework, we're going to stray out of that in a way that is very, very dangerous.
Like a loving parent, they create boundaries, and then so they just don't give them enough rope to hang themselves, and give them
right. And it could be if you have a child that is innately wants to do it, you don't have to make those boundaries; they make them for themselves. But once you see you have a child that if you don't make the boundaries, they're going to go out of bounds, then you have to make the boundaries. That may be what happened with the Chet HaEgel.